I remember the day Mom brought John to our house for dinner. She was glowing, her smile wide as she introduced him.
We met at work,
she said, her voice bubbly. John looked harmless enough, a tall man with dark hair, a neat beard, and a confident smile. Nice to meet you, Tara, he said, extending his hand. I shook it reluctantly, feeling his grip linger just a second too long. Mom deserved happiness. I knew that. After Dad passed away, she'd been lonely. And I wanted her to find love again, but John? I didn't like him. No one could take my dad's place, and John's constant attempts to win me over only made it worse. He started showing up increasingly, always trying to charm me and my cousin, Liam, who lived with us. At first, he bought us little gifts, tickets to a basketball game and a pair of headphones for me. He joked around like he was trying to be our new buddy. Then, one evening, Mom and John sat us down.
We have exciting news,
she said, holding his hand.
John and I are getting married.
Liam cheered, and Mom's eyes sparkled with joy. I forced a smile. If she were happy, I'd have to make peace with it, even if my gut told me something was off about him. One day, I was in the kitchen late at night, making a snack. I just finished a sandwich and turned around. John was standing in the doorway, watching me. I didn't hear him come, so seeing him suddenly jolted me.
Whoa, John. Why are you...
He didn't let me finish. You should be more careful. His voice low and dicey. Someone could sneak up on you. I laughed nervously.
Yeah, I guess.
He didn't laugh back. He just stared blankly, then walked away. I didn't pay attention to our weird interaction that night. A few days later, I accidentally spilled juice on the carpet in the living room. John was watching TV and he snapped. His face turned red and his eyes bloodshot in anger. Do you know how expensive this carpet is? He shouted, leaning down on my face. His bad breath and spit almost made me vomit.
I'm sorry.
I stammered. Sorry isn't good enough, he said, his eyes narrowing. You need to do better. Do you understand me? He grabbed me by my shoulders and shook me like some helpless lamb. I nodded quickly, almost tearing up. And then there was the night I heard them arguing. Mom's voice was shaky, pleading.
John, please, calm down.
She said. Don't tell me to calm down! He roared. I peeked into the living room, my stomach twisting. John was towering over her, his fists clenched. Mom looked so small and scared. Her chin was bleeding and she had bruises on her arms. Enough is enough. I decided to dig into John's past. I found an old shoebox in his closet, hidden beneath a pile of clothes. Inside were fake IDs, credit cards with different names, and stacks of cash. My hands trembled as I pieced it together. John wasn't who he said he was. He's lying. He's lying to my mom, to all of us. I had to tell Mom, but I wanted to wait until I got home from school the next day. I wanted Liam there, too. That afternoon, as the final bell rang, I grabbed my backpack and headed toward the parking lot. I was unlocking my bike's chain when a familiar voice spoke behind me. Did you go through my belongings, sweetheart? Drops of sweat appeared on my forehead as I turned around. John was leaning on me, a dark, evil smile on his face. Tara, 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 he said, his voice calm but menacing. We need to talk.
I don't want to talk to you,
I said, backing away. He took a step closer, pulling a knife from his jacket. You should have minded your own business, little birdie. The parking lot was nearly empty. I screamed for help and my voice echoed into the void, but no one heard me. I tried to run, but John lunged at me, twisting my arm. I fought back, kicking and struggling, but he started dragging me toward his car. He stomped me on the bonnet and then stabbed me in the shoulder. The feeling of flesh slashing and blood pouring is not something any teenager should experience. I knew if I gave up, this man would kill me and make my death seem like an accident. Adrenaline surged through me. I grabbed his wrist, twisting it as hard as I could. The knife clattered to the ground, and I dove for it. Let go! He shouted, trying to pull me back, but I was faster. I swung the knife toward him, my hand trembling. He lunged again, and I reacted on instinct, plunging the blade into his chest. He stumbled back, his eyes wide with shock, then collapsed onto the pavement. I stood there, gasping for breath, blood dripping from my shoulder. My hands were shaking so badly I could barely hold the knife. A teacher ran over, shouting for help. Sirens wailed in the distance as the world blurred around me. The Tara Newell case is a remarkable story of survival and resilience, highlighted in the true crime podcast and TV series Dirty John. Tara, the youngest daughter of Deborah Newell, became the unexpected hero in a terrifying encounter with John Meehan, a con artist and abusive man who manipulated Deborah into a toxic relationship. On August 20th, 2016, John ambushed Tara in a parking lot with the intent to harm her after his manipulative schemes were exposed. However, Tara fought back fiercely. Despite being attacked with a knife, she managed to wrestle it away and fatally stab him in self-defense. Her quick thinking and bravery saved her life. The case sheds light on the dangers of abusive relationships, the power of self-defense, and the strength of the human spirit. Tara's actions made her a symbol of courage, inspiring others to trust their instincts and fight for their safety. My name is Anna, and I work as a showgirl in Las Vegas. It's not a glamorous life, but it's the one I built for myself after running away from my abusive parents at 17. With no degree and no skill that could land me a good job, I had to take whatever came my way. That's how I ended up here, on a dimly lit stage, dancing under neon lights, surrounded by men with lustful eyes. The nightclub was packed as usual. The air was thick with smoke and the scent of cheap cologne. Men sat at small, sticky tables, sipping overpriced drinks while watching us perform. My heels clicked against the stage as I danced, the pole cold against my skin. I was used to the stares by now, even the occasional whistles and shouts. It was part of the job. But that night, one customer stood out. He was sitting in the far corner, shrouded in shadows. I wouldn't have noticed him at all if it weren't for his eyes. They seemed to glow, almost like a predator's eyes in the dark. They never left me, watching every move I made. A chill ran down my spine, but I pushed the feeling aside. Creepy guys came with the territory. When my set ended, I headed to the bar for a quick drink of water. That's when he approached me. "Anna," he said, his voice low and smooth. I froze. How did he know my name? He smiled, his teeth unnervingly white. "Your performance was mesmerizing."
"Thanks,"
I said flatly, not wanting to encourage him. He extended a hand. "I'm Yoni." I didn't take it.
"Nice to meet you,"
I said, keeping my distance. "Let me buy you a drink," he offered, his tone insistent.
"No, thanks,"
I said, trying to be polite. "Come on," he pressed, his smile tightening. "Just one drink."
"I said no,"
I replied, stepping away. As I turned to leave, I heard the crash of glass behind me. I whipped around to see Yoni standing there, blood dripping from his hand. He had crushed the glass he was holding, and shards were embedded in his palm. But he was smiling. "Oops," he said, his voice light, as if it were a joke. My stomach churned. I hurried away, my heart pounding, and found two of my co-workers, Lisa and Jade, smoking outside in the back alley.
"Some guy just freaked me out,"
I told them, trying to shake off the unease. Before they could respond, Yoni appeared, stepping out of the shadows like he'd been waiting there the whole time. "There you are, Anna," he said, his voice dripping with something I couldn't place. Obsession, maybe. "I thought we were getting to know each other." Lisa narrowed her eyes.
"Who the hell is this?"
"I just wanted a picture," Yoni said, ignoring Lisa and staring straight at me. "A picture with the most beautiful girl in the club."
"No. Leave me alone."
He stepped closer, and Lisa, always the fiery one, slapped him hard across the face.
"Did you not hear her? She said no, you creep."
I backed away, shaking.
Yoni, I'm serious. Leave me alone. A no is a no. Do you understand that?
For a moment, he just stood there, his face calm, his eyes dead. Then he turned and walked away. Lisa snorted.
What a psycho.
But before we could even breathe a sigh of relief, he came back running. This time, he wasn't alone. He was holding a knife. Lisa saw it first.
What the...
Before she could finish, Yanni lunged at her, the blade flashing under the alley's dim light. He stabbed her once, then again, and again, laughing as he did it. The sound of his laughter, high-pitched and hysterical, will haunt me forever. Jade screamed, but I was frozen, my feet rooted to the ground as Lisa's blood pooled beneath her. Yanni turned to me, his smile wide and insane. You can't leave, Anna, he said, his voice almost sing-song. You can't get away insulting me. No one does. I snapped out of it and ran, my heels clattering against the pavement. But he was faster. He grabbed me by the hair, yanking me back so hard I thought my scalp would tear. Don't run from me, he shouted, his voice suddenly filled with rage. I screamed as I felt the knife pierce my back. The pain was searing, blinding, but adrenaline kicked in, and I twisted out of his grip, falling to the ground. By then, the chaos had spilled into the club. People were screaming, running in every direction. Jade shouted for security, tears streaming down her face as she cradled Lisa. Yanni tried to run, but the bouncers tackled him to the ground. He thrashed and screamed, his laughter turning into guttural howls. The cops arrived minutes later, dragging him away in cuffs. I was rushed to the hospital, my vision blurring as the pain in my back became unbearable. Lisa didn't make it. Even now, I can still see Yanni's face when I close my eyes, his glowing eyes, his twisted smile, his blood-stained hands. That night didn't just change my life, it ended someone else's. I survived, but I'll never feel safe again. On October 6, 2022, Yanni Barrios carried out a stabbing spree along the Las Vegas Strip, resulting in 2 deaths and 6 injuries. The attack began after Barrios approached a group of showgirl impersonators, and when they declined his request for a photo, he began attacking them and others nearby. Barrios exhibited a lack of empathy and remorse, attacking strangers. His actions were impulsive and violent, aligning with behaviors often associated with psychopathy. The random nature of the attacks in a popular tourist area combined with the brutality of the stabbings left the community and nation in shock. The Monon High Bridge Trail was our spot, a place where we could laugh as loud as we wanted, take goofy pictures, and talk about everything we wouldn't dare say at school. That afternoon, the air felt heavier than usual, but we didn't think much of it. Abby, Libby, and I had crossed the bridge so many times before. We just made it across, laughing at how I'd almost tripped over a gap in the planks. Libby was lagging, holding up her phone to snap one last picture of the tracks disappearing into the horizon.
Another one for Instagram?
Abby teased, rolling her eyes.
You'll thank me when we're famous.
Libby shot back with a grin. We didn't see him at first. A man stood at the far end of the bridge, stocky with a blue jacket and jeans, his cap pulled low. He wasn't moving, just staring.
Creepy guy alert.
Abby mumbled, her voice just loud enough for us to hear.
Let's just go,
Libby said, tucking her phone into her pocket. We hurried off the bridge, trying not to look like we were panicking, but as soon as we passed him, he turned. His boots thudded against the wood, deliberate and heavy. Abby glanced back, her face pale.
Hey!
He called out, his voice rough and sharp. We froze.
Down the hill,
he said, pulling a gun from his jacket. Libby grabbed Abby's hand and Abby latched onto mine. We stumbled down the steep, narrow trail, the sound of his boots crunching leaves behind us. My heart was pounding so loud I could barely think.
What does he want?
Abby whispered. I didn't answer. My throat was dry, my legs heavy. Libby kept looking over her shoulder, her hands trembling. The trail ended near the creek, The water is dark and sluggish. The man pointed the gun at us and barked, "On your knees!" We dropped down. The mud was cold and sticky, soaking through my jeans. He pulled a knife from his jacket, its jagged blade catching the light.
"Please."
Libby begged, tears streaming down her face.
"I'll do anything, just..."
He grabbed her by the hair and yanked her back. The knife slashed across her throat in one brutal motion. The sound was sharp and wet, like meat tearing apart. Blood sprayed from the wound, hot and bright, splattering across my face. Libby's eyes bulged, her mouth opening and closing as she gasped, clawing at her neck. Her legs kicked wildly, her shoes scraping at the mud as she tried to crawl away. The blood gushed faster, pooling around her as her movement slowed. Her fingers twitched weakly, then stilled. Her lifeless eyes stared up at the sky, frozen in an expression of terror. Abby screamed, a sound so raw it made my stomach twist. She scrambled to her feet, but the man grabbed her and threw her back to the ground.
"Pretty little thing,"
he sneered, kneeling beside her. His voice was calm, almost playful, as he dragged the blade across her cheek, leaving a thin red line. "Don't?" he interrupted, his tone mocking.
"You think begging's gonna save you?"
He pressed the knife under her chin, tilting her head up. Blood trickled down her neck as she whimpered.
"Stop crying,"
he said, his voice cold now.
"They always cry."
With one savage motion, he drove the blade into her stomach. Abby's scream was guttural, filling my ears with agony as blood soaked her hoodie. Abby turned her head toward me, her eyes filled with panic.
"Run!"
she gasped, her voice wet and weak. Blood bubbled from her lips as she tried to speak again, but her head slumped forward, her body convulsing as her screams turned to gurgles. I ran. I don't remember thinking, only moving. My legs burned as I pushed through the brush, branches tearing at my face. Behind me, I could hear his boots crunching leaves and the sound of my friend's screams fading in the distance. I tripped, hitting the ground hard. My palms sank into the wet dirt, my hands tainted with blood, Libby's blood. I gagged but forced myself up. The woods seemed endless, trees closing in around me. My breath was ragged, my chest aching, but I didn't stop until I burst onto the road. Headlights blinded me as a car skidded to a stop. I collapsed onto the pavement, screaming incoherently. A woman jumped out of the car, her face pale. All I could utter was,
"He's got them."
I spent the next 48 hours in the hospital, and when I came back to my senses, I heard the horrible news. The search teams had found my friends, Abby and Libby. My best friends were gone. Their bodies were found near the creek, mutilated beyond recognition. Libby's phone had captured a grainy image of the man on the bridge, the recording of his voice forever echoing in our town.
"Down the hill!"
When Richard Allen was arrested in 2022, we thought we'd feel relief, but knowing him didn't make it better. He wasn't a monster hiding in the woods. He was someone we'd passed in the grocery store. Even now, their screams echo in my dreams. The knife, the blood, their wide, terrified eyes. It's all burned into my memory, and that voice, low and steady, still whispers in my ear,
"Down the hill!"
It'll haunt me forever.
In February of 2017, 13-year-old Abigail Williams and 14-year-old Liberty German were found murdered near the Monon High Bridge in Delphi, Indiana. The case drew national attention, especially after police released a photo and audio of a suspect captured on Liberty's phone. Despite extensive investigations, the case remained unsolved for years. In October 2022, Richard Allen, a local resident, was arrested and charged with their murders. In November 2024, Allen was convicted on all counts and subsequently sentenced to 130 years in prison.